Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's the Round Ball Rock Podcast, starring Dave Schilling, Spencer Hawes, Joe Harris, Joey Devine, Alonzo G, Alexei Schmidt, Sean Keane, Raheem Christmas, Sir Dominic Pointer, special guest Jake Fisher, Patreons Chi Chi, thank you Chi Chi, Mitch Rodericks, thank you Mitch, Mark Light, thank you, Mark! Musical guest, David Griffin! And now the temporary host of Round Ball Rock, Joey Devine!
Hi, it's me, Joey Devine, your temporary host of the Round Ball Rock podcast, and we are back with another brand new episode. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, my best friend, your Uncle Dad, Sean Keane. Sean, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. Good. Doing well.
Are you currently demanding a television show retract a retraction from a television show?
Are
you?
Yes, it's the show Caroline in the City.
Yeah.
I don't think they're fair. It's not in the show. It's in the comic strip within the show that I'm upset about. And you know, to be honest, I haven't asked yet, but it would be nice if Just Shoot Me acknowledged some of my spec scripts that I sent in. Here's the thing. I imagine if George Segal and David Spade had to change jobs for one day.
Mm-hmm. It's true. What if the dad from Veronica Mars was for some reason considered sexy?
Oh yeah, like a photographer, a guy who looks like a serious creep. That's what I like.
For our listeners that don't know what we're talking about, look, if we have a big show. We have an NBA newsbreaker on, and it's the playoffs, but the only thing I want to talk about is Jerry West demanding an apology from the television show Winning Time.
Yes, a retraction and an apology. Okay, so I'm going to tell you my favorite thing about it first, and then you tell me your favorite thing about it.
Yeah, let's do that.
So this retraction demand is, like, written by a lawyer, but also just kind of mailed to Adam McKay and his offices. But it also contains, like, letters of support and testimonials from, like, Mitch Kupchak and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Mm-hmm. That is also how he... did his memoir. There are a lot of, like, testimonials that people write to him. And so my question is, most of the letters in the book end with someone saying, like, you know, I'm happy to write this for Jerry. I'm sorry he's so miserable and I wish he'd go to therapy. Like, four different people, it ends like that. So I'm wondering if these letters also did. Like, Adam McKay, I think that was very unfair. He never threw his trophy out the window. And also, I just wish Jerry would go to therapy.
So my favorite part about the letter is, so all of the testimonials from, like, Norm Nixon and Kareem or whoever are all, like, and Michael Cooper are all like, yeah, Jerry was never mad. Jerry never acted like this at all. But all of the parts written by Jerry and his lawyer, his main beef with the show appears to be them saying he didn't want to draft Magic Johnson. Like, the anger parts and the, like, characterizations are, like, throwaways. What he's really mad at is that TV Jerry West wanted to draft Sidney Moncrief instead of Magic Johnson, who, by the way, is also a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, is a very good player. yeah.
Well, Sean, we're in luck because I actually got in touch with Jerry West's people and got him to send a statement to us
about this. Oh, great. Okay.
So I'll play that right now.
What's up, Lakers fans?
NBA logo, Jerry West.
We're here full of enthusiasm and...
I've got this thing and it's golden. And I'm just not giving it up for nothing.
I know we've had some rough years, but...
Keep me in the loop.
That's right. That was actually Jerry West. It was not at all a recording of Rod Blagojevich or Ellen Barkin from...
Animal Kingdom.
Animal Kingdom, pitched down to sound
like... R.I.P. Smurf.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Smurf.
Sean, we got a big show, but we also have some mail, and you know what that means. We've got to go to the phone drop.
Yeah, we do.
Sean and Joey can't come to the phone right now, but luckily phones are the domains of me, a robot. If you know the extension of Tillman Fertitta, please dial it now. Press 1 to have a single beer with Zach Lowe. Press 2 for Senegal-related inquiries. Press 3 for movie times read by Brooke Lopez. Press 33 to hear problematic things Bill Simmons wrote in the early 2000s. Press 0 at any time to leave a message for Sean and Joey. That's right, you too can leave a message for Sean and Joey, just dial 323-682-0342. Once again, that number is 323-682-0342. Please give me a call. Being a robot is a solitary road.
All right, Sean. Our call comes from our friend Mike Burkett up in Portland, who I'm sure is enjoying the CJ McCollum show, but we'll get to that later. Here's what Mike had to say.
Hey, Sean. Hey, Joey. It's Mike. Taking a break from the first day of the playoffs and out for a little walk, and a thought came to me and I want to run it by you two. What is the scariest movie that Jeff Van Gundy has seen? Thanks, I'll take my answer off you.
This is a truly great question.
That's
Sean,
good.
What is the scariest movie Jeff Van Gundy has ever seen?
So I had some thoughts, and I thought that I think Jeff takes a lot of things at face value. I don't think he watches a lot of movies. I am basing that on the story about him driving for 17 hours without listening to the radio or a podcast or anything. So I think he might have gotten very scared at the movie Step Brothers when he saw it, mm-hmm. because he thought it might mean that he and Stan would have to move back in together. Mm-hmm. And then he saw the fake testicles and he just started like ranting at that point. But I think that Jeff Van Gundy accidentally saw Poltergeist 2 and it really scared him.
Why Poltergeist 2?
Because I think he wouldn't have seen the original for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think what happened was he's just dropped out of Yale to play college basketball somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And then coach college basketball. He's trying to review game film and the videotape gets switched. And he ends up watching like a Poltergeist 2 that somebody taped. And it's like mm-hmm. super long play. So it's actually, he thinks it's scarier because the sound is so weird. Anyway, I think he accidentally watches an unlabeled tape of Poltergeist 2. And then ends up watching a lot of it, thinking that the game film will start at any moment, and it never does, and gets really scared.
That's a really good one. I think the scariest movie, of course, is he's ever seen is, of course, Disney's Hocus Pocus. and I think it's because he's a big fan of Bette Midler and Kathy Najimy, but also uh-huh. he was looking through his fingers the entire time.
He's scared.
He's so scared of those witches.
I also think he, one of his players at some point talked him into seeing Con Air. I think it was mm-hmm. Charles Smith, actually, on the Knicks. Mm-hmm. And it really scared him because he remembered there's that scene where a plane is getting towed by Con Air. Mm-hmm. And I think it reminded him of the time that the New York Knicks team plane destroyed his Honda Accord.
Yep. Uh-huh. So, Sean,
also, no one on the team would give him a ride home.
So, Sean, we don't just take phone calls. We also take written mail, which you can do at patreon.com/roundrockpod. By joining our Discord, you have 24-hour access to us at all times.
Yeah. of all our personal numbers.
You also get bonus episodes. But if you don't feel like doing that, you can always email us at roundrockpod or contacting us on Twitter at roundrockpod. Or our email is at roundrockpod@gmail.com. No at. I don't know why I'm having trouble with Twitter handles and emails. All right, Sean. Our question comes from our friend Beeps, who asks, is there an NBA player you are fond of who had Joker energy during his career but evolved into another form of energy, like a Pokemon? Or is there a player who unexpectedly has Joker?
Man, I was thinking about the Joker today. Mm-hmm. Well, look, we're the preeminent podcast for NBA Joker studies, right? Yeah. I don't think anyone else dives into it.
We're the number one NBA Joker pod for sure.
And I noticed I was watching the Bulls Bucks game today, and I saw DeMar DeRozan's giant tattoo
of Heath Ledger's
Joker. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I did some research and I found out he actually got that tattoo. He was inspired because Rob Palenka mm-hmm. actually introduced him to Heath Ledger after that movie came out. And it was a really special moment for him. He and Kobe met him. It was cool. Okay, so who had Joker energy that evolved into a different form of energy?
This one to me is an easy one.
Okay.
It's Matt Barnes.
Oh, interesting.
Because Matt Barnes on the court was angry chaos of both mm-hmm. good and bad. Also, like, real spindly, but also would definitely fight people.
Uh-huh.
But now, as a media man, he's like a thoughtful weed dude.
Yeah. I would say Rasheed Wallace formerly had some Joker energy, although that was a little bit of a
racism.
Comic book streams. It's kind of a J. Jonah Jameson situation. Yeah. And he just kind of got out of Portland. And then he had like delightful energy.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very Pokemon transformation. I just don't know how much he changed. I think he was maybe just as delightful the whole time, maybe. Okay, so a player who unexpectedly has
I have the most energy. Unexpected Joker in NBA history. It's Daryl Armstrong. He did a layup in the dunk contest.
Uh-huh.
And he also, that one time as a Dallas Maverick, when the Washington football team beat the Dallas Cowboys, he took the arena's microphone and asked, "How about them Cowboys?"
That is really... It took him a long time to get to the NBA, so maybe he didn't feel free to Joker it up quite that hard right away.
There is nothing more Joker you could do, though, than a layup in the dunk contest.
Well, I will say that Michael Finley did a cartwheel in the dunk contest.
Yeah, but that was like a lame dunk, you know what I mean? Like, he still dunked after the cartwheel.
Uh-huh. Didn't Dwight Howard technically do a layup when he had the Superman cape on,
too? But he's, like, over the rim. Like, Daryl Armstrong is, like, below the rim.
Why was Daryl Armstrong in the dunk contest? I can't remember him ever dunking. Like, I'm sure he can. I would also say that I did not expect Nate Robinson to have the degree of Joker energy that he had when he entered the league. Like, it was like, oh, this guy was a football player. He's small and cute. And then it's like, he beat up Malik Rose in the shower?
Right.
Like, that's how the Joker would beat somebody up.
I mean, that's more like Eastern Promises energy, though.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's Viggo Mortensen energy. That's a whole different podcast, honestly.
I will say about Nate Robinson, his performance in Uncle Drew... has the he's going for it in the way actors go for it when they play the Joker now.
Yes, it is a performance where Reggie Miller and Chris Webber are doing insane like silly character choices, like it's not good, but they're like trying to do something.
They're
doing a voice.
Like they're in commercials, though. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Like this is it's very much like, what if that guy who lived in the
Wendy's was
the Wendy's seat breakfast? Yeah, was also old. Like that's kind of it. And then Shaq has a degree of seriousness, which is actually a little bit unsettling in the film.
It's very unsettling.
But Nate Robinson is like a method actor.
Yeah, it's very... And he has no lines.
He doesn't have a lot of lines. And so there will be these scenes where like Nick Kroll and Tiffany Haddish are riffing with Lil Rel. And then Nate Robinson's catatonic in a wheelchair.
Yeah, staring into the distance in an uncannily believable way.
I will say, what do you think is the most dramatic scene in Uncle Drew?
Oh, it's Shaq and Uncle Drew and Kyrie Irving standing at the woman they both loved's grave.
Yeah. It's I believe it's Shaq's wife's grave.
Yeah. I think that's
and Uncle Drew had sex with her, which broke up their team. And they don't really resolve it. Uncle Drew just says, "I loved her too." Yeah. And then Shaq's okay with it. And then he's doing a nude scene. Mm-hmm. Shaq does a nude scene in Uncle Drew, in case you haven't seen it.
Not his first nude scene, though.
Is he nude in like Grown Ups 2 or something?
He's gotta be. I've seen Shaq's butt on film before. It wasn't that shocking.
It's less big and more long than I expected, I would say.
I mean... Who else has Joker energy, though?
It's
Sean?
Weird
We're
because
missing some people.
It's weird because the people who embrace the Joker, like as a character
never
or a Halloween costume, never.
Yeah.
I thought Raja Bell had a degree of Joker energy.
He was a little too. He had like.
I just remember him doing like some crazy violent thing. Did he like? Like
he horse-colored Kobe
in the back of the, he horse-colored Kobe, and it was sort of like I guess he was maybe like scrappy enough defensively that the full Joker could come out in a weird way.
I felt like he was out of control. He had like a...
I will say it's hard to have Joker energy on the Phoenix Suns in any era.
Yeah. I mean, I would say Steven Jackson had Joker energy for sure.
Yeah, from the start.
Yeah. But it wasn't unexpected.
No, and instead of the Joker letting the mob's money on fire, he made Chris Cohen light a pile of his own money.
Well, he also lit his own money on fire by not accepting that contract from them. Remember that?
Yeah. Well, and then the other time he lit some playoff money on fire when he somehow wasn't happy being the 15th man on the team, and then Tracy McGrady almost won a ring.
Yeah.
As a result, after he got canned.
I will say.
I mean, are the We Believe Warriors, like, is that a team of Jokers?
No.
I mean, there's two. Andres Biedrins has Joker energy.
Kinda. But at the time, he didn't. I would say Petras had the third most Joker energy on that team.
I'm just saying that is a significant amount of Joker energy, and I would say that Monte Ellis grew up to be a bit of a Joker.
Yes.
He's like the Joker without getting dumped in the vat of acid, maybe.
I just don't think Baron Davis or so ever.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's a lot of Jokers in the rotation. I can't think of a team with more. Okay, J.R. Smith. Does J.R. Smith have Joker energy?
No, J.R. Smith has, like, Riddler energy. I was going to say Bill Laimbeer has Lex Luthor energy.
Yeah, like, he's just an open villain.
White guy who's
an
asshole.
And he's like, I'm just going to use my power and my white privilege to take you down, too.
I do think the Bad Boys. Oh, Dennis Rodman had Joker.
I mean,
that's the number one Joker.
You could even maybe say that the Joker has Rodman energy, to be honest.
Anthony Mason, he had Joker energy for sure.
Oh, Javaris Crittenden for sure.
Yeah, well, he had like all right, we got to move on because we've got a big show. We're going to have an interview with Jake Fisher from Bleacher Report. But before we do that, we have to, as quickly as possible, talk about the playoffs.
It's the NBA playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Basketball for humans.
We're going to be championship.
Data for robots.
Both teams play hard, my man.
Both teams played hard.
All right, Sean. Here's how it's going to go. Because we have to get to Jake, what we're going to do, you're going to announce the series and what the score of the series is.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to play the Pitbull playoffs theme. And, if the song ends, the conversation ends. Like, that's as long as we can go for each series. You got it?
Yep.
All right, Sean. What's our first series?
It's the Miami Heat are up 2-0 on the Atlanta Hawks.
All right, Sean. This series has been not great, I would say.
Yeah.
What's your hottest take on this?
Hottest take is if the Miami Heat win this series, Jimmy Butler's best friend Mark Wahlberg should be allowed to give Trae Young a haircut. And my less hot take is that the Miami Heat somehow made themselves wildly more likable when Victor Oladipo came back and sat down, and then Max Strus started starting ahead of Duncan Robinson. Like, suddenly this is, you don't have to root for, like, a weird prep school guy.
Yeah. I would say my take on this series is, sorry, I did not realize Mark Jones was at the end of that clip. But that's the end of the song. No hot take for Joey. All right, Sean, what's our next series?
The Boston Celtics are leading the Brooklyn Nets 2-0.
Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
What's your hot take on this series?
Okay, well, Jaylen Brown has 45 points in two games. He's shooting 18 of 37. He has 7 steals. My hot take is that fasting is not that hard.
My hot take on this series is game one was the best first playoff game ever in a series, in a first round series at least. And also, Kyrie Irving should be allowed to give more people the finger.
I agree. Also, defensive player of the year, that's for babies. Mm-hmm. Might as well be for Marcus Smart. We're giving adult men trophies. Might as well be a weird thug who injures people all the time and tried to jump kick Klay Thompson in the face.
My other take on this series is, sorry, I'm always going to laugh at Mark Jones announcing the Indiana Pacers when that comes up and my take doesn't get to come. All right, Sean. What's
oh
our next
boy.
Series?
Okay. The Bucks and Bulls are tied 1-1. Okay, so my hot take is that Chris Middleton's MCL was sprained tonight because of Grayson Allen's terrible karma. Pat Connaughton should just get an MRI now. By the way, tonight, Grayson Allen had 2 points, and then he made 1 of 2 free throws with time expired and his team down 5 points.
My take on tonight's game is that DeMar DeRozan's awesome, dude. I don't know. They either need the Bulls need some a few more players.
I know, but they're going to beat Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton's out, baby. Dr. Nate Duncan said he's out for 2 weeks. But also, you can check out more about this on The Bulls Are Back in Town, our Patreon only Bulls mini pod. One new episode coming this weekend.
All right, there's Mark Jones. It means it's time to move on.
We're really getting into it. Okay. The Sixers are up 3-0 on the Toronto Raptors.
All right, Sean, all right. What's your hot take?
Danny Green has transformed the Sixers. Suddenly their offense has spacing. They're closing out on 3-point shooters. They're not giving up transition buckets. And honestly, they're playing basketball the right way. Thanks to Danny Green, who is honestly a borderline Joey. I'm sorry. Dave Dufour Venmo'd me $14 to say that. And if you Venmo me 14, no, go ahead.
My take on this series is the reason the Sixers look like a competent, good basketball team is because they're finally playing B-ball Paul. Paul Reed getting minutes, not doing anything except being like a plus 14 every game, even though he puts up like zeros in the stat line.
He had 2 points tonight in 8 minutes and 2 turnovers and 2 fouls.
In game two, I think he put up full zeros, but again, was a plus 12. All right, Sean, what's our next series?
Our next series is the Phoenix Suns and the New Orleans Pelicans are tied 1 game each. My hot take is that the CJ McCollum trade was really a steal, in part because they got Larry Nance Jr., but it's honestly crazy that they beat Phoenix with their big offseason acquisition, Devontae Graham, playing 7 minutes and 3 rookies playing like all the time. And my hot take is David Griffin only succeeds by accident.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, that's definitely fair because he also accidentally signed LeBron James that time. All right. I would say my hot take on this series is it's a bummer Devin Booker's hurt, but proof that you shouldn't be fist bumping babies ever.
Yeah, that's it. That's a fist. It's a baby.
I do think
back off, dude.
I do think it's very possible he thought that was Chris Paul, though, not just some random baby.
As a young looking 48,
small man. All right, Sean, what's our next series?
This is the Memphis Grizzlies and the Minnesota Timberwolves are tied 1 game each. So I believe this both strategically and spiritually that the key to the series for Memphis is playing Kyle Slow-Mo Anderson as much as possible, mainly because he's like slow and deliberate and the Timberwolves are very fast-mo all the time and totally out of control. He's like if he shook hands with Jaden McDaniels, they would cease to exist.
My take is less about this series and more about what happened in game two, and it's that referee Zach Zarba, we looked at you enough in the first quarter of game two. You don't get to do that anymore. It took 45 minutes. You had like 8 reviews or something and 2 technicals. I hate you.
It also, it like saved the Grizzlies because Steven Adams was in foul trouble and they had to play Tillman and Clark.
All right, Sean. What's our next series?
The Warriors are up 2-0 on the Denver Nuggets. All right, here's my hot take. So far, Boogie Cousins and Nikola Jokic have both gotten 2 technicals in a game and ejected. Aaron Gordon and Monty Morris each have a technical. I think that Facundo Campazzo joins the rotation in game 3 and gets 1 and a flagrant 2. And I think Bones Highland will get 1 before the series is over. My over-under for future Boogie Jokic technicals is 2.5.
My hot take on this series is everyone's looking for a name for that new insane Warriors lineup with Poole, Clay, Curry, Wiggins, and Draymond. And the only possible name, do not listen to anyone else, the only name officially recognized by Roundball Rock is Andrew Wiggins and the Water Dudes.
Yes. They're also the Batman lineup because they make the Joker crazy.
You're not allowed to keep talking. All right.
You're right.
I have to delete that now. Thank you.
Damn it.
All right, Sean, our final series. What is it?
Dallas Mavericks and Utah Jazz are locked up at 1 game each. My hot take is that Mike Conley is no longer the best player to never make an all-star team, though. Did he really make that all-star team? He was the 3rd injury replacement. But I do think he's the best player in NBA history to go scoreless in a playoff game while the guy he was guarding went for 41 points. And isn't that even more unique and special? Also, my other hot take is that Rudy Gobert shouldn't have even been 3rd in that Defensive Player of the Year vote, because he sucked ass.
My take on this series is, I don't know, the first time I ever heard the name and saw the player, Dorian Finney-Smith, I laughed, and now I feel bad about it, because he's fucking tight.
Yeah, it's really good. It's just so great. Maxi Kleber, Dorian Finney-Smith, and Spencer Dinwiddie just beating those whiny babies off the court.
All right, Sean, that's the playoffs.
Wow, I think we pretty much covered everything.
I think so. We'll be doing that probably for the rest of the playoffs now, because that is the best way for us to cover actual basketball games, I think, is 56 seconds a piece. Sean, we had Jake Fisher on. Jake, you might recognize Jake Fisher if you're on basketball Twitter as he writes for Bleacher Report. He breaks a lot of news. He hosts a podcast called Please Don't Aggregate This. And he wrote a book called Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. We talked to Jake about what it is. What's it like being an NBA newsbreaker? And you can hear that right now. Here's to you, past Joey.
We're very excited to have with us a Brooklyn-based journalist. He is a writer for Bleacher Report. He is a newsbreaker, and he's the author of Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. He also has a new podcast called Please Don't Aggregate This. Please welcome Jake Fisher. Jake, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Thank you for I actually have the show today in an hour, and I'm not like identifying as a podcast host, but people keep plugging it when I do talk places. So it's like I'm trying it on. I'm seeing how it fits.
Yeah, it's really new, right? You've only done 4 or 5 episodes.
So I was at halftime, not to go into full self promotion mode immediately. I was at halftime for a little while doing like a live audio type thing. And now at call in on the app there, the episodes get saved and chronicled as full podcasts. And I believe they're in Apple and Spotify now too. So,
oh, very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. There's
that's
my plug.
That's a big step for podcasting, as a podcaster myself. So, Jake, what we a thing we wanted to talk to you about for sure is what it's like becoming an NBA newsbreaker, because that's something that's happened to you somewhat recently, where you've kind of jumped the upper into the upper echelon of like must follows on Twitter.
Yeah.
So the first thing I want to ask is like, how do you like cultivate a source? Because yeah. We're idiot comedians, and the only thing we know how to cultivate is drink tickets.
Yeah, we.
I've got a couple buddies in the New York stand-up scene, so I definitely have a lot of respect for. What's the role of the guys who stand on the street basically?
And barking. Yeah, I've done that. Yeah,
respect for the barkers out there. I think you know, the funny thing about being like a quote unquote must follow and being aware of the push notifications that happen is like something that I am aware of. And like the fact that like I tweeted about Kendrick Lamar's album announcement, and a couple people wrote that they found out about Kendrick Lamar's album announcement from me, which like is kind of dope. Like
I think like 90% of Twitter found out that Trump had COVID from Shams that one time.
Yeah, that's
I actually remember where I was when Trump. I was on the toilet because Twitter news storm that happened. But yeah, to answer your question about, you know, quote unquote cultivating sources, I think the best way to do it is to not view people as sources, which is kind of a backwards way to go about it. But like I remember when I was younger and. To give you the real answer, like I started meeting a lot of connections around the league. When I first was 18, 19 years old at Slam Magazine as an intern, because I was doing these draft profiles for players who were like 15 to 40 on the mock drafts because they weren't getting any press. So I was finding their agents' contact info online and calling them up and saying, I'm with Slam Magazine. Like, let me give your guys some pub.
Yeah.
And the agent's info leads to, you know, one day when you start getting credentialed and making contacts when you do stories with, you know, the Celtics come into town and Brad Stevens is the coach. And, you know, I watched other people like Pete Thamel, who was a mentor of mine at Sports Illustrated, like just go up to people and say, hey, let me get your number. I'll text you the story when it's up. And people want to read about themselves. And I think just valuing that human element of who the people are on the other side of things, you stay in touch with them in a respectful way. Like players don't want to be your friends. A lot of these people are not your friends, they're contacts. And you do it long enough where I was just writing like fun Mike D'Antoni's addicted to Starbucks stories that you guys probably would have enjoyed. Uh-huh. And like for a while at SI, I was just kind of like the goofy, like, oh, that's a Jake Fisher story, quote unquote. People would tell me in the NBA of like different, like I did a whole thing one time about like calculating the cost of a summer league invite from like the hotel room to the gear to the
blah, blah, blah.
Just like a random what is that story? But I knew it was interesting to basically show like how much money is being spent on these guys who aren't even going to play at all in the NBA. And by the time I Bleacher Report came in the fold, I got laid off at SI in 2019. Bleacher was very nice to have me on. They wanted to push me into being in this transaction space. And I literally just called 15 guys I knew around the league and said, can I call you every week now to ask you about this stuff? And they said yes. And then from there, once you start writing about what's happening, it's not too hard to get the contact info, at least of the people involved. And if you just make the call, like I've come to find out, at least where I'm at this point, people are typically going to answer. So, that's just kind of what happened. Yeah.
So that's good to know. If you want your Twitter replies to immediately jump up to thousands of people saying, Jake, my wife left me, all you have to do is,
years of quality, respectful journalism work.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then occasionally, do you ever have to meet an agent like in a parking garage at midnight who's smoking cigarettes?
How many big trench coats do you own?
I mean, it's funny, but that stuff does kind of happen because, I mean, let's be honest. The reason I think I've had some type of success in the quote unquote newsbreaking space is because it's a pretty saturated market. There are particular people, let's say, who get a large swath of the information, and when the information is final, and I think a lot of the information that I'm able to bring out is stuff that might not necessarily be stuff that people want out. It's very nice to have a report that says so-and-so signing a four-year, $80 million deal. Uh-huh. He had great success in his last team, and like now he's going to be in a perfect role here. I mean, there's value in doing that too. And I obviously, and when someone deserves their props, I give them their props. I try to be as honest and fair as I can be. So yeah, like when I do write some stuff, like the real reason that Gerson Rosas got fired in Minnesota was because he was having an affair with someone in the public relations office. Like that was the real reason, not anything else. So like, sure, when I write something about the Pacers and Nate Bjorken, and there's some Toronto details, like there are people from those teams who don't necessarily want to be seen with me at Summer League in public because it was a recent
because Nate might punch them because he's a rageaholic. I said it, not Jake.
Yeah. So, well, of things that you've recently broken, it's interesting. So you recently tweeted that you thought Jake said there's a big possibility that Ben Simmons is going to play for game three. Can you confirm that his teammates were saying that he was playing like Jordan?
So one thing also, this is the podcast of record, right? So when I say things, everyone in the world is going to hear everything.
Yes. You
know? Yeah. Well, 800 people in the world, but yeah.
Solid as a rock is what our logo is.
There you go.
NBA rumors die in darkness.
I just think two things also about like, the newsbreaker space. I think it's funny that people think everything gets leaked because I promise you, I don't get leaked anything. I'm playing with the nail to get it gets leaked to other places. The other thing is when I report something, when people say like I thought I said like I believed it was my take, like I don't think Ben Simmons. I mean, I do think Ben Simmons is going to play game three, but because people have told me that Ben Simmons is trying to play game three. So like, it's funny when people say like, oh, Jake Fisher wanted to break up the two Jays in Boston. Ha ha ha. Look at how successful they are now. Like, I just said that on a radio show because a lot of people in the NBA were like, shit, Boston's not doing so well. Maybe they'll, not this year, but come the offseason, sure, if they have another flame out. No one expected them to do what they did. And now everyone's saying Jaylen Brown is off limits. You know what I mean? So like, I don't think what I'm reporting, I'm just saying what I'm hearing. So it just points to me sometimes that people like get mad at me for coming up with an opinion about whatever, but it's not an opinion. It's a report.
Yeah.
So I want to ask about your background a little bit, like becoming a newsbreaker. Is there anything in your youth, did you love rumors and gossip in high school? Were you the guy constantly being like, oh, did you hear about what happened in third period?
I wouldn't say I'm a gossip, but like I definitely am someone who people I think like to talk to. Mm-hmm. And I like to ask particular leading questions, to figure out, oh, like I'm pretty sure Susie likes Johnny. Like, how can I put Susie and Johnny together? But in a way where like they don't really know that I'm putting them together, like planting little seed type things, stuff like that. Or like if I know someone in the friend group is like a little bummed with another friend, I can like push them together. Uh-huh. Like on the walk to the bar from the pregame, like that little like little nudge. Oh, that's like a little moment that you guys can share, and then it'll be like blending for the rest of the night and all of the fun. That's definitely because a lot of the job is like hearing about a dinner. Let's say this is an analogy I always give to people. If there's six people at a dinner and something big happens, if I can talk to four of those people, I can pretty much figure out from their different vantage points what the truth is, mm-hmm. Or at least what I believe to be the truth. So
it's like kind of, NBA Rashomon. That's your job.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I do joke with people who I meet in the real world, who like kind of don't, like some people like know what I do and they're like, what is other people are like, that's a job, like what? So I used to explain it as being an NBA gossip columnist, as like a quippy way to say it, like it is. So I get that, but I also do try to make sure that like what I'm writing isn't like, sometimes I will write a rumor because it's interesting that it is a rumor. Like I wrote about the Lakers a couple weeks back, because it was fascinating to me. There was this rumor going around that an agent for Clutch Sports, obviously LeBron's agency, mm-hmm. this guy Omar Wilkes, whose father Jamal Wilkes played for the team, or for the Lakers.
Yeah, he's on Winning Time.
I believe Omar played at UCLA or is from the California area originally. Forgive me if that's incorrect. I'm just talking on a podcast. So he was being rumored as a potential GM replacement for Rob Pelinka, which I thought was so fascinating that it was everywhere. So when I called people who would know, they all shut it down. And multiple people said to me, well, that rumor is actually being perpetrated by CAA agents who are trying to prevent Clutch from stealing Paolo Banchero, who CAA represents for NIL purposes at Duke. Like, that's a story to me.
Yeah.
Like that little gossip game. Yeah, I'm going to write about the gossip if that's something that's showing a real tectonic plate shifting detail of the NBA hierarchy. So that's when I write about gossip. But there's a lot of stuff that I hear every single day that I'll tell people like, yeah, I think that's a rumor. Like I've heard that too, but I don't think it's real. And I mean, those rumors are part of my job too, being that just making fun conversation with people on the phone. I'll say like, what's the craziest rumor that you don't believe that you've
heard? I was just going to ask you, you don't have to say it, but what's the weirdest fake rumor you've heard?
I mean, I'll just say like, there's stuff all the time about people having like a stripper girlfriend or like some like stuff like that, or like a secret family thing amongst executives, like typical like rich guy things that you or like party boy athlete tropes. Like, I mean, unfortunately, like those stereotypes get, you know, the drum gets beat a lot, like that type of so-and-so's got a baby mama in this city, and the reason why he wants to sign with Atlanta is because that's the, like, it'll be cheapest for him. Like, he's got three baby mamas there, like that type of, I mean, it's a lot of it's bullshit and like offensive to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, people do say that. People absolutely do say that stuff.
How much, when you're talking to guys that could be sources, are they trying to find out information from you at the same time?
Yeah, it's like every conversation and like a cold information war.
No, I mean, sometimes they are. Like, there's definitely, I mean, when you write about something that is bad, like, it's just a bad situation. Mm-hmm. Like, or,
like, I'll
know.
Say it, like anything in the Dallas Mavericks front office. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, like, that's a good example. If I was calling Dallas people about that whole story or the ongoing whatever story, I mean, yeah,
maybe, or any of those stories.
Yeah, like that would be a call where it's like, all right, like I'm doing my job, I'm putting my reporter hat on here, like I know you gotta protect the company shield, blah blah. Or like whenever I was talking to Brooklyn or Philly people about the James Harden Ben Simmons situation, like it wasn't a bad thing, but I was like, that was big boy pants stuff, you know.
You had to put your fedora with the card that says press.
Yeah,
on.
But also they did too, right? Like I think the reason why, like, I was able to provide a lot of information that I did on that story was I was very attuned to all the things at stake for every actor involved. You know, Kevin Durant's stake, Kyrie Irving's stake, James Harden's stake, Ben Simmons' stake, Joel Embiid's stake, Daryl Morey's stake, minority owners in Philly, you know, the Brooklyn for like when you
the Rocky statue. Yeah.
When you're able to talk to people in those situations and be like, look, I see where you're coming from. Like, I understand blah, 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 blah. But like, here's where I'm coming from. I have a job to do. It's very easy to, I think, put on that hat. But to go back to answering your question, like, people make fun of me all the time when I'm in those casual settings, like, is this on the record? And it does kind of annoy me to a certain extent, because I feel like I've tried to separate myself from that type of thing. Like, I always say we're off the record until we're on. And sure, like, if I'm having lunch with a guy and he says, I mean, we're just talking shop, and he says something that's interesting, like, yeah, I am going to file it away as like an off the record thing to just know my bank of knowledge. But that's just like what I think those guys are doing too, to answer your question about them. Like, people call me wanting to know what I know every day. And I think that's why people want to answer my call too, because like we can provide value to each other. And unfortunately, a lot of people have taken that to be on our side of the business. We can provide value by spinning a narrative. I don't do, but like, they can pick and choose to give me information that they think will benefit their narrative. And it's up to me to be responsible to think, well, why would someone be telling me that? That's one piece of that puzzle. That's one person sitting at that dinner. Now, how do I play that against all the other information that I have? So, I don't know. I'm just going to end my ramble there.
So would you say one of the main tenets of being an NBA newsbreaker, it's like your classic reporter thing, right? You have to cover the who, the what, the where, the why, the how, and the what are the salary cap implications?
Yeah, of that's this rumor.
Yes, for sure. I mean, honestly, you could probably cut a lot of those and just narrow it down to what are the salary cap implications. I've come to meet a lot of the analytics, the cap cruncher dudes and women in front offices who, I mean, really do run the show a lot of the time, especially for an ownership group that does not want to be paying luxury tax dollars. So, I mean, a lot of transactions that happen are you can find the root of it by following the money, and a lot of them you can predict what's going to happen. I do try to cover NBA front offices like I'm covering Wall Street. So it's definitely you can definitely see, like, the Portland Trailblazers. I didn't know exactly what they were going to do at the deadline, right? But I mean, pretty much anyone who talked to a couple of cap minded guys in the league understood very well that the Blazers were going to do at least something to get under the luxury tax threshold, because all they had to do was shave, like, I think it was $3.9 million. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot of those moves that definitely happen. But also when the Heat, for example, move a pick or they move Casey Akpala and like a second rounder to free up a first round pick, like, a lot of people are like, oh, that's going to happen at this deadline. But there were definitely people I was talking to also said, like, nah, they're doing that now to start preparing options for what they could do this summer. And now that they know the deck is cleared, like, that gives them a full range to just run all these different simulations and ideas and blah, blah, blah. And then you just write that down in your running notebook and keep that filed away till the next time someone says something, oh, Miami, blah, 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 first round pick. And they're like, oh, let me recall that note. And you bring it up, and then you start asking a lot of people about it. And there you go.
Yeah, that was actually going to be partly my next question, where it's like, so the way the NBA season works for you, right? Like, the games are at their most important now, but it sort of seems like there's less for you to do in between the summer and the trade deadline, right? Like, is this sort of a downtime as like a news breaking guy? I mean, obviously you're getting like Ben Simmons is maybe coming back, or like Kyrie Irving flipped off another fan or whatever. But like, it just seems like there'd be less like pounding the pavement needed.
Yeah. It's starting to pick back up now that we've got 16 teams. How many league teams in the league? Everyone's talking about expansion.
Oh, yeah.
That number 30 isn't so quick anymore. There's 16 teams who are out of it right now. So those teams are on full-on off-season mode. And Every single agent is right in the throes of trying to sign these draft prospects. So the there are wheels moving in that regard. And a lot of the wheels that are being moved are teams also setting their table or getting their cards ready. I'm running out of dumb metaphors for when these other teams get knocked out and to start. Dirty secret. It's like pretty much considered fair game that once your season's done, like once you're done playing games, if you're a free agent, if you're, you know, no longer under contract, like, or, you know, teams that aren't playing right now, like a lot of those players know, like, if they're probably going to get traded, like there's a couple guys, I'm not going to name them, but there's definitely a couple guys around. I mean, one, like Malcolm Brogdon, let's say his name's been out there like a while. The second that the Pacers acquired Tyrese Haliburton, everyone around the league was like, Malcolm Brogdon's probably getting dealt this summer. Like, I don't know if that means he's not going into the Pacers facility every single day, but yeah. Like, there are some guys who in that situation would definitely be like, cool, I'm out. I'm going to go work out in Miami with my guy, or I'm going to go to my hometown, or I'm going to go to just the city that I've come to like, and I'm living there in the offseason now. Like, the offseason wheels are churning. The dead zone is between post deadline, like, I don't know. There's some dust to get settled that you can still kind of sweep your broom and write a couple stories off of after the deadline. But it's really quiet between that and like now. And then I'll have stuff. I mean, the job gets easier. It gets busier, but it gets easier now to write something interesting now until like summer league, honestly. So it's like we're in busy season for sure. And then like August, September, it's pretty quiet. Once the season gets back up, like kind of have to start figuring out something again. And that's like usually injury related, like, this guy got hurt in training camp. What's the trade talk now?
This guy, which guy actually gained 20 pounds of muscle, and which people are just saying he gained 20 pounds of muscle. Exactly.
But you don't have sources telling you what's going on in like Greek islands or anything during August and September.
I mean, listen, man, I know there's literally thousands of people that I've come across in this is my ninth year covering the league, from like boutique agent Y to, and I'm not, again, I view sources as people. So this is not to commodify everybody, but like from agent Y to random assistant coach from some European team that I interviewed 7 years ago for a story for Slam. Like, there's people I don't even know who they are anymore. Like, honestly, I'm sure they don't even know who I am because we talked one time.
Yeah.
But like, if I'm coming across a name, like, I remember there was this prep school coach like called the Kent School or something like that in Rhode Island that like just happened to have coached two kids back to back that I was writing about in two drafts. And when I got on the phone with him a second time, I was like, oh, like, we're old friends. Like, I'm sure if I came across, like, his name's not even coming to mind right now. Or if like I saw him doing research on, you know, let me connect all the dots to all the people in this guy's orbit that I might be able to get a hold of. Like if I saw his name, I would definitely say like, hey, remember we did that story a couple years ago? It can be, you never know, like to go back to the Greek islands, like when I'm calling someone randomly, like you never know where they're going to be. Like I got on the phone with someone for the first time last week who's in Costa Rica right now. Like maybe he was going to see some high school kid and I was going to know about that kid. And then long story short, 7 years from now, that kid was Giannis 2.0. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
There's so much basketball, and the people who work in basketball are just obsessed with it. They talk about it all the time. They travel to go see it. They eat, breathe, sleep it. So yeah, like could I hear about some random dude playing in like Cancun on vacation who some college coach saw and recruited one day? Like I wouldn't rule anything out. Yeah.
So your book is, I mean, your podcast, we'll talk about, we'll get to the book in a second. Your podcast is called Don't Aggregate This. And, there are certain NBA newsbreakers. I'm thinking of one at ESPN who's like the funniest personality in the NBA, in my opinion, who appears to be truly terrified of aggregators. Is there anything you're more afraid of than getting aggregated? Heights, spiders, snakes?
I'm not afraid of getting aggregated. It's that I get frustrated when people want to be like first on something that someone else reported. And by doing so, they also misconstrue the context. And then like an Instagram graphic goes viral, or like an NBA Central thing. That's, I mean, if I write a 1500 word story about the Lakers, but they pull out, you know, 280 characters, and that goes super viral and it's misconstrued, and then it's like wrong. And then maybe,
you get yelled at by that agent.
That or then also, like, I mean, like, I got a book out. I hope to do other books, and like, I am, you know, I do value the integrity of my reporting. Like, if people start to get misled about my accuracy in my work, and it affects my ability to do my job or to sell a product that I work very hard on that is honest and full of honest reporting, that would suck too. So I do care about that. The thing about the please don't aggregate this title is that I just think it would be funny to see in like a hoop.
Right. No, it is.
Fisher said, please don't aggregate.
Like, that's this. Hilarious. Yeah.
So that's really the only reason why I did that. I didn't have a title on the halftime show, because this is a podcast. They asked to like have a show with a title, you know, and I just thought it'd be hilarious, so that's what I did it for.
Well, now that actually led me to ask one more question before we get to your book. So our friend Mike Richman once told a story on this podcast. He's a Blazer reporter, about answering his phone at a Costco and Neil Olshey was screaming at him for like 20 minutes. Where is the weirdest place you've ever had to take a phone call from an angry GM or agent or player's family member?
Well, I mean, it's pretty easy to answer, because I have IBS, so I spend a lot of time in the back. And I get a lot of calls while I'm on the toilet, and there are like certain times, like, there are certain people, as much as I don't want to admit this, there are certain people who, when they call you, like, you have to answer. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't answer, it's a big miss, right? Yeah. That's just what it is. So that happens a lot. There's honestly the time, like, now it's more about like, if I'm really drunk on a Saturday night and like someone's just like, I'm out with my friends, or like, I remember I was in Denver for an Eagles game, and like, I'll be honest, like, I was very, very cross-faded on like a Wednesday in Denver, and I got a call from a GM who was like really not happy about what I wrote, and I just like had to like navigate it. And I remember my friend, when I hung up, was like, what was that? Like, how did you? I was like, fight or flight mode. Like, it just, you just, the senses come, and you just gotta take the call. And those are the worst. I mean, there are times where I'm like, I just can't talk to this person right now. Yeah. But there are those people that when their name's on your phone, it's a thing. Like,
oh, sorry, Linda Rambis, it's my wedding day. all right, and then let's talk about your book, which is about tanking. Which is something, as a longtime Golden State Warriors fans, Sean and I were upset with on a yearly basis, because they would refuse to tank most of the time.
Yeah, they were really bad at it. Sometimes they'd even try and blow it at the end. Won a game once with five active players, and they didn't get Boogie Cousins as a result.
Sean was at a game against the Oklahoma City Thunder one time where the Warriors had like an amazing comeback, and it was the last game of the season, and I was furious the entire time they were winning.
It was Joey's best friend's birthday party, yeah, by the way, and we'd gotten a suite, and as the scrappy Warriors took down Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, Joey was seething.
That's it, man.
So your book's about tanking and how it changed the NBA. I guess, how do you want, like, I guess my question is, explain your book.
So the book came about being that I'm from Philly originally. I was covering the Sixers for Liberty Ballers at SB Nation while I was also doing that like early slam stuff that I was talking about earlier. While I was up at school in Boston, I had a credential to go to Celtics games, and the Celtics traded KG and Paul Pierce to Brooklyn the same night that Hinkie traded Drew Holiday to New Orleans to start the process. And that was also right when Orlando dealt Dwight Howard in that deal that connected Philly and the Lakers. And they were tanking for that 2014 draft. Same with Phoenix when they moved Steve Nash to the Lakers. The Cavs were in the post-LeBron days. Like, there was a lot of people, a lot of teams in the league who were trying to really try to mimic what OKC and what Miami had did in terms of, I mean, Miami tanked and got Wade, and then Wade attracted LeBron and Bosh, and the Thunder got three straight guys and KD, Russ, and
Harden. Don't forget they also tanked for Michael Beasley. That was the big move that summer.
That's also part of why I wanted to do the book, being that I think because there are those bad examples or the horror stories, there are also, you know, right now the Celtics are on the back of Tatum and Brown, who they got in these drafts that, you know, they built through my book. Joel Embiid is the pillar of Philly. I mean, the whole thing with Ben Simmons didn't work out with Jahlil Okafor, didn't work out with Nerlens, it didn't work out with Michael Carter Williams. There were so many other guys who came through that door, but it got Joel Embiid, it got a couple other pieces that got a couple other pieces that now help them get to this unit they have here. Like, Devin Booker is a big product of the Suns draft tanking model. I mean, they weren't trying to tank when they drafted him, but he was benefited with his growth by being in like a rebuilding setting and kind of getting thrown there. And DeAndre Ayton's the number one pick. So I don't know. It was a subject that I was covering very, very closely throughout the start of my career. To bring this back to your very first question, like, I met a ton of people around the league by covering that story. So I felt like I had the resources at the time to, I mean, I know a lot more people now than when I wrote that book. But not like an exponential amount more, like that helped. And, you know, I met people through it, blah, blah, blah. Like, I knew going into it, there are certain stories now where it's like, oh, if it's about this team, like, I'm not the guy to write that story. Like, I just don't have as many contacts, or those people there don't love the stuff I've written about them in the past. So I knew I could do that. And it's a topic that at the time I really cared about. To be honest, people think and want to expect me to have like such a strong opinion for or against tanking. And I've talked about it so much for 2 years. Like, to me, it's just like a thing that, like, it's a concept that exists in sports. Like, it just is what it is. It changed the leagues because that time period, because, like, directly because of Hinkie and others, they instituted the new draft reform where the odds are a lot lower. There's now four lotteries. The bottom three teams all get an even 14% chance rather than the worst team having a 25% chance. And the play-in tournament, you know, while they did want to have a lot of intrigue and encourage more teams to be involved, at the end of the season, that was also to dissuade tanking and to prevent and to give teams like New Orleans, who's in the playoffs right now, you know, if the Pelicans didn't have the play-in tournament, they would have absolutely tanked, you know, before the play-in tournament existed and before the odds were what they are. So they're one, you know, success story, I guess, of the changes of that time period. But also you see OKC and Orlando and Houston and Detroit doing things that, you know, Sam Hinkie never, ever did that would make the process blush of just benching guys and sending them home for half the year and stuff like that. So obviously it's still alive and well, but I also think that the concept wasn't nearly what it was, and it wasn't so mainstream until the time period that I wrote about.
Well, you listeners, get that book. It's called Built to Lose: How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. This has been Jake Fisher. Listen to his podcast. Follow him on Twitter. Jake, thanks so much for coming on. Also, where's Russell Westbrook getting traded? Oh, we're out of time on our Zoom meeting. All right.
Next time.
Thanks. Thank you guys for having me. This is awesome. This is a lot of fun. I really appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks a lot, Jake.
Thanks, man. That was great.
All right, Sean. So we wanted to finish off. We haven't heard from our friends in a while. The Dunking Twins, the biggest Marvel fans in the world, Disneyaholics. One of them is in the playoffs. The other one is currently, I don't know. What do you think Robin's doing?
I think. Well, no. Yeah, Robin was He was upset that TNT was not showing the closer tonight.
He was said. Because Brooke was playing on TV. He was burning his own brother. Luckily, We've got them right here. Here's Brooke and Robin at the movies.
Brooke and Robin Lopez at the movies. Twin brothers in who? And fandom. DC versus Marvel. Offense versus defense. Nerds who are jocks. Post-ops versus hard screens. Jocks who are nerds. Cain versus Abel. The Snyder Cut. Take it away, Brooke. Or Robin. I'm not really sure who is who.
Hey, Robin.
Hey, Brooke. How's it going?
It's going all right. Full disclosure to the listeners. We've recorded this before the playoffs started. My back, I just came back. I fixed it in that pit from The Dark Knight Returns.
Wow.
That's how I'm going to play in the playoffs. It was really crazy. All these guys were chanting, "Ish, hoosh, hush, ish, hoosh, hush."
Yeah, that's really cool. That's very inspiring.
Well, I watched a news report of you riding Splash Mountain.
Yeah, really, over and over again. Yeah,
and it really... It just fired me up to get my back fixed and come back to town.
You're not allowed to ride such a rollicking flume ride if you have a back problem.
Me.
Brooke, I mean, I know we are lifelong enemies, but I've been very worried recently.
Oh, why is that?
Because I saw the new Spider-Man No Way Home.
Oh, yeah? It's so
and now good. I'm worried about the multiverse.
Oh, why?
Will I have to fight mascots from time and space and other dimensions like Thunder or the Brooklyn Knight or Berserker 75?
You could take the Brooklyn Knight.
What about Rufus D. Lynx?
I met the Brooklyn Knight. You yeah. Him.
Okay, what about Sir Slam-a-Lot or Maxie Minor?
I don't know who those are.
Sly the Silver Fox and Mini Sly, their attack team. What about Hip Hop, the somewhat racist, unvaccinated bunny mascot of the Sixers?
I would say if I were you and there's multiverses, I would be more worried that you'd meet another Robin who chose playing on a basketball team that could use him instead of riding rides.
I don't know, dude. It's pretty great. The Splash Mountain here is even faster than the one in Los Angeles.
I don't know.
I think I saw Sam Dunk on it the last time. I'm scared. What if Ian Whammer and Dunk of the Dragon are in cahoots? All right, I'm sorry. I gotta get that out of my head.
I gotta say, Robin, I'm a little upset with you.
What's the problem?
You saw Morbius without me?
Yeah, how could I freaking resist? Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't actually remember that character from the comics, but Living Vampire? Yes, please. I've played for Tom freaking Thibodeau, and that guy's a bloodless vampire, too.
It's just, you know, I've been in that Discord for months declaring it Morbius Summer.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't go to the premiere with Jared Leto and the other Discord folks.
Right.
Because I was getting my back fixed in the pit from the Dark Knight.
You're in the pit? Well, here's the thing, Raw. There's the thing, Brooke. You're going to the freaking playoffs without me. I wanted to come along. And you said, no, Serge Ibaka's going to go. And he's going to serve gross food instead of all the fun nerd ropes I was going to bring. And regular nerds and extra butter pour over popcorn that Giannis loves. But instead you said, oh, it doesn't work under the salary cap. It's not going to happen.
Look, I told you, Robin, like, you chose Epcot over playing on a team that, like, you could help.
No, Coach Bud told me they had too many brothers already.
Oh, I mean, that's true. And he didn't.
Yeah, this is Thanasis and Alex and Feta and Zeus and Kronos and Yanni, all the other Kikumpos. Anyway, I mean, one of those guys is a really freaking great keyboard player, so I guess I kind of get it.
This is, after all, Robin, a movie show, so I guess I should explain why we're here. We're here to give away, it's award season, of course.
Right.
The Oscars happened, and the Grammys are happening, and the VMAs. And so it's our time, it's the time of the year where we give away the twinsies.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain to the listeners why our award is called the Twinsies?
Yeah, because we give out awards in categories that are the same, but also a little different. Just like you and me. Yeah. They seem very similar, but actually inside one of them is a wolf. That's me, Brooke.
And inside of me is just a guy who wins the playoffs and is a really chilled dude.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever met that dude. Shut up! That guy who slapped me on a stage because he drank so much Jolt freaking cola.
Look, I don't really see the big deal over slapping people at award shows, because every time you and I give out these awards, I would say a good 3/4 of it are us slapping each other.
Yeah, pretty much. Sometimes we don't even open the envelope. I guess you once tried to paper cut me with the envelope. Usually that envelope is slapped out of one of our four giant enormous hands within milliseconds of us getting there. Remember that time that you tried to punch my head through the podium? And then remember when I ripped off my rented tuxedo and tried to choke you out with the jacket? Why doesn't the Oscars have more of that?
I don't know. There's just not enough family love in Hollywood.
Yeah, I guess they just don't believe in affection. Although, remember when you told me, to keep Spider-Man's goddamn name out of my goddamn mouth? And then I actually had a Spider-Man figure in my mouth? That was kind of weird.
It was really crazy.
I don't remember why I even did that. I guess I was sort of in a fugue state.
Well, we should give out the awards now.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Our first category goes to the best actor. And the award on three. Ready? One, two, three. Ezra
Josh
Miller.
Lucas in the Forever Purge. Wait, what did you say?
I said...
Oh, that's really good. That's like the most applause-worthy movie moment I've ever freaking
seen.
We'll
get to that. We'll get to that. But I gave it to him because he convinced us all and then went to Hawaii and was...
Yeah, that was kind of like
me. So he must be a really good actor. It is kind of like you.
It is kind of like me, except I'm not very fast.
So what was your best actor?
I picked Josh Lucas as Dylan Tucker in The Forever Purge.
You saw The Forever Purge?
Yeah, I wish we had a real Forever Purge in the NBA with no flagrant fouls ever. I know, I got Chris to take me.
Chris, our brother?
Yeah, our brother Chris.
He's allowed to see rated R movies?
He has a fake ID. I mean, it's a GameStop card, but it works.
Okay, best actress.
Okay, I'm gonna give mine first.
Okay,
I thought it was Margaret Robey in Suicide Squad. Brooke, did you know that Harlequin is a word that means clown, a conventional buffoon of the Commedia dell'arte, and also has a mask and pigtails? But
yeah,
she does it
course.
All. She does it all as Harley Quinn.
Of course, I learned that at Stanford.
Yeah, we were both in Gaieties. We almost didn't do it because it was called Gaieties, and we realized it was a rollicking adventure of a theatrical production. So anyway, Harley Quinn loves, she cries, she murders wantonly. And even though the Suicide Squad is all about roughhousing and they go to prison for murder and they destroy an alien race of starfish led by the kaiju-sized starfish, Starro the Conqueror. Mm-hmm. But mainly I'm giving this to her because my girlfriend's going to be here for freaking Halloween.
I'm not even sure what to do with that information.
I think I might be Starro the Conqueror. He's a gross big blob. And, I love him.
For best actress, I, of course, thought that the best actress was Angelina Jolie as Thena in Eternals.
Oh, yeah.
Because the way she was able to create those weapons with her mind, but also her mind was deteriorating from the Eternals disease that they have called Ma-Wiry was incredibly touching. It was also very incredible. Touching.
Yeah, I definitely understood that entire plot, Brooke. Mm-hmm. All right, best supporting actor, who you got, Brooke?
Oh, easy. This one's so easy. It's the dog for the CGI dog from Disney's The Call of the Wild.
Oh, he was so good. Was that Andy Serkis?
I don't think so. I think it was like a real dog that they made CGI. Of course, he was called Buck. I should be nice. His name is Buck.
Yeah, I read that as a graphic
novel.
And
he just looked so good with Harrison Ford. And I really liked in the movie when Harrison Ford was like, give me back my dog.
Yeah, that was great. I loved it when he did that. I was like, they better give him back his dog or he'll crash a plane on them. Mm-hmm. Well, my best supporting actor was from the movie Free Guy.
I almost named it Free Guy. Was it Big Guy?
No, it wasn't Big Guy. I didn't pick Blue Shirt Guy. He's a main actor. What I like the best about this, I mean, look, there was a source code stolen by a CEO who used AI, and I lolled, and I was ROTFL. And what I really liked the best was when this movie talked about other movies and video games, because that's what we like to talk about all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think it's Sean Levy's best film since Real Steel. Mm-hmm. Anyway, best actor goes to Richard Blevins, although you probably know him better as Twitch streamer Ninja.
Of course I know Ninja. I have his cell phone number.
What?
Yeah.
Sometimes I Snapchat him.
It's what happens when you win a championship. All the famos want to talk to you.
Wow. Can you tell him? I wanted to speed run.
Best supporting actress.
Okay. All right, I picked Nora Lum, a.k.a. Awkwafina, as Sisu from Raya the Last Dragon. And as Katie in Shanghai.
You have to pick. You have to pick.
Okay, well, it's hard to say because Katie's really funny and she helps fight on a placeless gray CGI background. Like all finales should be on a faceless blank background or in a factory warehouse, but I gotta go with Sisu, the dragon who helps to banish the Droon, the eagle, evil dark-colored spirits that turn every living thing in its path to stone from the continent of Kumandra, and then it unites the warring Fang and Heart tribes. Mm-hmm. That kind of reminded me of the time when we were leg wrestling for almost 72 straight hours, and then we joined together to go to the midnight screening of Revenge of the Jedi.
I for this one picked Veronica Falcone, who of course played Trader Sam, the female chief of the Puka Michuna tribe. Disney's The Jungle Cruise.
Wow.
And it's not because I liked the movie, because I didn't.
Yeah.
But it just reminded me so much of Disneyland.
Uh-huh.
And one of the most boring rides at Disneyland, but I still love it.
Yeah.
So I felt like it really needed some recognition.
Brooke, can I tell you a freaking secret?
Yeah.
My best screenplay winner was Glenn Ficarra, John Requa, and Michael Green for Jungle Cruise.
Wow.
One of the greatest rollicking adventures of the year.
I guess I have to do my screenplay award now.
Yeah, you do.
And I went with Dana Fox and Tony McNamara for Cruella. Because I felt like it was really groundbreaking to make a movie about a female Joker.
Yeah, that was good. It had a lot of Joker energy. I think the conclusion that we can really draw here is that you need more than one screenwriter. Every good movie has at least two and possibly eight.
Well, and I guess I don't really know how the screenplay category works, but do I also have to name the three people who got the story by credit?
I mean, it doesn't even matter, but it just means that screenplay's three times better. I mean, we just made a freaking comic book and we had four people involved.
Because, you know, you want to know something weird? You know who has a story by credit on Cruella?
Wait, who?
That guy, Steve Zissis. Who's in
Wait,
all the
guy, the undersea adventurer?
No, the guy from all the Duplass movies. He was the star of Togetherness on HBO.
Oh, wow. I know who that is. Wait, was Cruella a mumblecore?
I think it might have been.
Wow. Okay, I guess now we're at best freaking director.
Yeah.
Do you want to go first or should I?
I think we...
Yeah.
Zack Snyder.
Oh, I went a different direction, Brooke.
What?
My answer was Andy Serkis, the director of Venom.
Venom 2? Colon,
Let Them Be Carnage. I like that they could have made it There Will Be Carnage, and they didn't because the movie There Will Be Blood made me so angry because it made me think of you always trying to steal my friggin' milkshakes.
Well,
and also, that movie didn't really have enough blood.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you're like a really bloodthirsty guy all the time.
Uh-huh.
And you had to wait a really long time for any blood in that movie.
It's true. Well, I like this one because you didn't have to wait, and he portrayed the struggle in living with a parasitic symbiote who won't leave you and is a true freak.
Actually, Robin, can I change my twinsie
for this? Yeah, you one? you can change your freaking twinsie.
My best director goes to three Spider-Men.
Oh,
Spider-Man,
wow.
Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah, I mean, I assume all the Spider-Men directed that scene.
Yeah, yeah. They directed all the scenes.
Yeah. Also, I want to give a shout out. He was snubbed at the Twinsies before, but Serkis was fantastic with his debut, Mowgli, Legend of the Jungle. And I think he was the motion capture actor for Venom and Carnage and Woody Harrelson.
Well, he also played Alfred in the new Batman, but that's not eligible for a twinsie this year. That's going to be a twinsie next year.
That's a twinsie next year. He's going to win.
Yeah. All right. And finally, Best Picture.
Best Picture.
On the count of three.
One, two, three.
The Flash entering the Speed Force.
Oh, wait. I actually picked that scene for Batman where Batman visits a mysterious prisoner at Arkham Asylum. And I loved it because the guy was talking in a weird voice. It was freaking unintelligible.
But that's not eligible for a twinsie.
You're right. It was the Joker entering the Speed Force. One of the greatest scenes.
It's the Flash entering.
What am I saying? I'm Joker-fied. Oh, can I confess something?
Yeah.
I'm using performance-enhancing drugs for this podcast.
What? Jolt Cola?
Pixie Sticks.
Fair.
Yeah. But yeah, when he goes into the Speed Force, I was watching that scene and I thought, no freaking way Flash goes into the Speed Force.
Yeah, I was just cheering and cheering and cheering, and I was cheering so loud that the woman in the theater next to me, her ears started bleeding.
Oh, that's so tight. I was jumping on my chair so hard that it actually activated rumble technology.
That's awesome.
In the whole row.
That's awesome.
It was great. People were throwing popcorn at me and it was sticking in my hair. I just started yelling, you're going to have to get into the Speed Force to throw that popcorn any further. And they said, that doesn't make any sense. And I just started going, Speed Force, Speed Force. And I put a guy in a headlock.
Well, anyway, that's the best picture of the year is, of course, the Flash entering the Speed Force.
Of freaking course.
From Zack the 12-hour Justice League. The Snyder Cut. The awards are over.
That's it.
I gotta go play in the playoffs now. Bye.
I gotta go in the teacups.
Was strange, Sean.
I'm not really sure what either one of them has been doing for like 5 months. I don't think Robin's been playing.
Well, Brooke was in the pit from The Dark Knight.
I guess that makes a lot of sense. That there's actually a bunch of theme parks in Orlando. It's not just the Magic Kingdom. So, you know, he's occupying himself.
Sean, that's our episode.
That's our episode.
Do you have anything you would like to plug?
Yeah, I'll be at the Punchline in San Francisco featuring on May 3rd and May 4th. One's for Phil Wang, one's for Chris Voth.
And then as for me, you can always follow me on Twitter at Frankie Muniz, where on April 15th, I tweeted, I got to fulfill a lifelong dream of being in an At Hansen music video. Don't let me down and check it, because I don't want to have worn such short shorts for nothing.
Oof. Boy.
A lot going on there. Sean, did you write a song?
I did. I got on my Ouija board. I collaborated with the ghost of Jimi Hendrix, a song about an emerging star in these playoffs. It's called Jackson Hayes.
Playing under us now. Trust the process.
Trust the process.
And shut it down. Let's all get Jake Fisher's book.
Jackson Hayes, it's in this game. Lately the Pelicans aren't playing the same. His sound looks funny, but this dude can fly. Excuse me, he shot 2 for 5. Jackson Hayes loves a mini bar. Freaked out when he got snubbed for Rising Stars. Did he play it, or is he playing out? Whatever it is, that cop tried to choke him out. A-cab. Oh, yo. Man, this guy got picked 20 spots ahead of Jordan Poole. Ooh. Ooh. Jackson Hayes, he's got huge hands. Don't know what's wrong with his glands. When he starts sweating, his jersey's drenched. Is he in the rotation or just the end of the bench? Oh, benchman. Oh yeah, Jackson Hayes, yeah. Oh, he's got a lot to learn from Larry Nance Jr. He's having trouble on that Cam Johnson pick and roll. Oh, baby. He
lit Devin Booker's hamstring on fire like it was a guitar at Woodstock.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.